Home, we are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are into a fresh week of what has been very disappointing baseball, and we wait months and months and months for the NFL draft. It is now it's over. We'll be talking about it. We'll be talking about it at Coco's Pub. I'm wearing the Coco shirt. We'll be there on Wednesday afternoon doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It is presented by the Maryland Lottery. I will have the Back to the Future scratch-offs to give away. Next Wednesday, the 7th, we will be in White Marsh for the first time in a long time. Going to be at Red Brick Station on the 7th of May, and we'll see you at Coco's this week. Jamie Costello coming by, Senator McCray, and some other friends. This guy was monitoring baseball. Then it was football. Then it was baseball. Then it was draft. Then it was Shedeur Sanders all day on Saturday. Luke Jones joins us now. A busy weekend and a busier week as the New York Yankees come to town. The Orioles have been falling down the mountain. But I know you were glued to the draft beginning on Thursday night. So let's start at the beginning. We did a long, long segment on their first round pick on Friday morning. But 11 picks, they made them all. They picked a kicker, Luke Jones. It looks like Justin Tucker may have kicked his last kick here, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still not a fait accompli. It's not 100% because I'll remind everyone, a sixth round pick, whether you're talking about a kicker or any position, is not such valuable draft capital where you say that guy is absolutely 100% unequivocally going to make the roster. Because here's the scenario, Nestor. The Ravens could decide at some point, at any point, that they're moving on from Justin Tucker. If Tyler Loop proves he can't do the job, and we've seen earlier draft picks around the league. We've seen all kinds of kickers not be able to do the job. I mean, Justin Tucker, last November, all you heard were Ravens fans wanting to throw him out the door because he was having the worst season of his career. Tyler Loop's not going to be on a scholarship where he's going to keep the job no matter what under that scenario. So clearly, Randy Brown did a ton of pre-draft prep. The Ravens never shied away from discussing the possibility of drafting a kicker. They clearly like Tyler Loop. He had a good career at Arizona, got a strong leg, made kicks, several kicks from beyond 50 yards last year, but he's also a rookie kicker. And you don't know for sure, in the same way that Justin Tucker was an undrafted rookie once upon a time. If anyone knew that, what kind of kicker he was going to become, he would have certainly been drafted by somebody. So, yes, it's significant. Yes, I think it shows you that the Ravens are very serious in preparing to move on from Justin Tucker, pending whenever this investigation is going to end. But that said, a sixth round pick at any position we know is not a slam dunk to make the roster. So Tyler Loop's got to go out, starting with rookie camp this weekend, and do the job and show that he's capable. Or regardless of what happens with Justin Tucker, they'll be bringing somebody else in to see if they can do the job. So it was certainly significant. That was the big story on day three, an unusual day three. I mean, 5 6 round picks selected, which you haven't seen the Ravens do a ton of that in recent years. They haven't necessarily prioritized sixth or seventh round picks, for one, because they do so well with the undrafted free agent process. But I think it speaks to what they felt about the depth of this draft, which is kind of what you heard. The middle rounds were supposedly where the most value was in this draft. So we can certainly get into, we talked about Malachi Starks. Mike Green was a controversial, but also a really fascinating from a football standpoint kind of pick. But the story on day three was obviously Tyler Loop and what that means for Justin Tucker, which, as I said to you, if they didn't draft a kicker at all, I think that really lent itself to where the Ravens were leaning. The fact that they've drafted one now, I think it shows you how real it is in terms of the distinct possibility, if not likelihood, that Justin Tucker has indeed kicked his last kick for the Baltimore Ravens.
Well, let's extend the conversation because we've been talking about Tucker for 10 weeks and his indiscretions and the Baltimore Banner. And, while I'm a scumbag, second-rate journalist here, throwing him under the bus, the would you envision a competition? Could that? I mean, that you're rolling your eyes a little bit. I'm feeling the same way. I'm feeling like, look, if you want to be done with the controversy, you blame it on the kicking. I wrote a script for Bisciotti. Go to Baltimore Pod. I wrote a letter to Bisciotti. This is how you do it. You get rid of him, but that takes away the net. Now, I would just say this: you and I have lived through Steven Hauschka. We have lived through who's the kicker that came out to the barn the one time and still kicking in the league 20 years later? The guy that kicked for the
Graham
Redskins,
Gano,
Graham Gano. There
who's
you go.
had a
There.
solid career,
I couldn't
yeah.
think of his name. That's how long it's been, 21 years, however long it's been. But and then the Vedvik kid that they dealt off to Minnesota, who they felt like they probably would have kicked with him had there been no Justin Tucker. They liked that guy enough to get a draft capital out of him after he got mugged down in Fells Point. But there have been other kickers' names around here that have failed, right? Like literally failed. Justin Tucker never failed. Matt Stover failed a little bit for a minute or two, and they brought in a kickoff specialist at one point toward the end of his career in Billick's reign. But Randy Brown ain't never known another kicker than, you know, I mean, same thing with Harbaugh since before Cundiff. And Cundiff was a failed kicker, I guess, right? We'll throw him in there too. Maybe the most famous failed kicker of all of it. But competition and letting Tucker kick to stay on the team, I don't know. It's so weird. There's zero tolerance, Luke, and they drafted a kid in the second round that had sexual allegations, sexual assault allegations against him. So I don't know if there's a playbook for this because I'm out of the predicting what Eric DaCosta and Steve Bisciotti are going to do, other than if there's a sleazy door, they're not adverse to it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the kicker competition, is that plausible? Is it possible? Sure. I mean, until he's off the roster, you have to acknowledge that possibility. And you know, I point blank asked Eric DaCosta if they receive periodic updates from the league regarding the investigation, if they've gotten any indication of when this, you know, is it wrapping up and they're going to have results in 2 or 3 weeks or next month or. Is it going to be training camp? Is it going to be the start of the regular season, right? I mean, we don't know. I wouldn't anticipate it taking that long, but it hasn't happened to this point. So what does that mean in the meantime? I mean, John Harbaugh confirmed Tucker was in the building last week. So that, you know, they haven't barred him from the, you know, it's not like they've given him an unofficial suspension from the
Well, he hasn't broken any
franchise.
laws. That's what they're going to
Well,
say.
sure.
So
No, but I'm
that's
just
part of this too, right?
But I'm just trying to gauge where this is in the meantime. Harbaugh said that he's had conversations with Tucker. I mean, look, just because Justin Tucker's disappeared from a public-facing standpoint, he's heard the chatter. He knew the Ravens were possibly, if not very likely, going to draft a kicker. So he could see the writing on the wall at least to that extent. But as we've always talked about, and this is not to make light of the allegations or that very real, very serious, very concerning situation. We're also talking about a kicker coming off the worst season of his career, and the guy that, as performance goes, was not, you know, not just bad for Justin Tucker. He was bad, period, last year. Now he finished the season on a higher note, but even at the time, we acknowledged that it wasn't as though he was tested in a way that, you know, he made two game-winning kicks at the gun. He hit six kicks from beyond 50 yards, and you say, wow, that looks like Justin Tucker, no questions asked, he's fine. So we always said part of this was also that, and if you want to categorize it as they could hide behind performance if they wanted to, sure, but the fact that the performance was not peak Justin Tucker in 2024 is absolutely a very real variable in this. So you bring in, you know, you draft a kid.
Without the scandal, let's say there's no scandal at all,
I mean, I wouldn't have been shocked if they drafted a
they would
kicker.
have been drafting a kicker,
Yeah,
right? I mean,
so that.
that's sensible based on his age, his money, and where they were. No scandal. If we go
Yeah,
scandal free, I agree with
and
that.
especially considering they drafted five players in the sixth round, right? It's not as though this was a draft where they only had five or six picks and then one of them's a kicker. That would have been a little bit different. But when you have all these late round picks, I mean, it kind of. Whether it was a sixth round pick, whether it was a seventh round pick, whether it was a priority free agent. And there were a couple pretty good kickers that we've even mentioned on our airwaves that didn't get drafted ultimately. You know, there were two kickers drafted. New England drafted the kid from Miami, and then the Ravens drafted Tyler Loop four spots later, you know, where, you know, at that point, I think they recognized we need to get our guy, you know,
Well,
because.
it was the kid from Miami, their guy.
Not that they wouldn't say so. You know, but they clearly like Tyler Loop because, you know, the kid from Florida State, for example, was in some circles ranked more highly. but he didn't get drafted. So they took Loop. It was funny hearing him on the Zoom. You would almost think he was like cousins with Justin Tucker, just in the way he talks, the way he discussed his craft, his enthusiasm, all of those different things. You know, you could kind of see why the Ravens took a liking to him in that way. You know, say what you want about this off-field saga with 16 allegations and all of that, and I'm not making light of that whatsoever. But in terms of what we've known about Justin Tucker's personality to that point in time, that's what I mean by, Tyler Loop reminded me a little bit of Justin Tucker in that way. But the Ravens said it all along. I mean, Randy Brown was, going to pro days and, it was out on the road and scouting kickers, and they did a lot of homework here. And again, because of the performance last year, would it have been quite the same level of urgency? I think it's tough to say that, but to sit here, on January 15th, before the season even ended, before the banners of initial reporting even came out, if you had looked into the crystal ball and told me the Ravens had drafted a kicker in the sixth round, I'd say, well, they're clearly looking for someone to push Justin Tucker at the very least, because you always go back to what Ozzie Newsome said about veteran players. You'd rather get rid of a guy a year too early rather than a year too late. And I think you could at least say that was a plausible scenario for Tucker, if even just to get his attention to say, hey, you've got to be better for 17 games, not just, oh, you did better over the last month of the season. So, it's a long roundabout way of saying I think they're preparing to move on, but until we know for sure, he's on the roster. And but in terms of the competition, is that really what you want in terms of the distraction, in terms of the PR backlash, in terms of how your fan base is going to feel about this, in terms of how your clients and business partners are going to feel about this, if Justin Tucker's there in training camp, let alone kicking in preseason games and, in front of a crowd, all that? I mean, is that worth it?
I don't think they care what the fans think.
And they might not. And they might
I
not.
just don't think that
Well, and I'm not.
that's not a topic in the building.
Well, and I will say this. You can't let that be the driving force. You have to have conviction in whatever your process is. And this might be where we can transition to Mike Green, right? I mean, the Ravens make a selection late in the second round. Mike Green, if you look at some of the draft pundits, some draft pundits had him ranked more highly as a prospect than Malachi Starks, who was the Ravens' first round pick, who was very highly regarded as a prospect. The difference with Mike Green is there is so very little known about the two separate allegations, one in high school, one of him at the University of Virginia. I want to carefully phrase this. He volunteered the information of talking about that at the combine. There had been plenty of uncertainty about why he had left Virginia to go to Marshall. That was kind of something that a lot of people, I guess, in college circles, NFL draft circles, there had been some scuttlebutt as far as what exactly caused that.
Well,
And
every kid's leaving college now, right?
well,
I mean,
and that's the thing,
so
but it
like
was
it used
under.
to be, hey, why did you leave? Now it's just, oh, you left over money, you left, you don't like the coach. You can leave for any reason you want now, and it's exonerated, I
No,
think.
it's true, but that was a little bit different in the sense of just the timing of it, in
Well, it used to be a
2022.
scarlet letter, right?
But it wasn't like this. It was just like, oh, he left for the transfer portal after the season. No, this was like he was gone from their program early in 2022. But to his credit, and I want to be careful, only that part of it, not touching whatever the details of the allegations were. He answered every question about it at the combine. He volunteered the information at the combine. But that said, when you're talking about someone that in some people's minds was a top 10 or top 15 prospect, I mean, on paper, this might be the best edge rush prospect the Ravens have drafted since Terrell Suggs. I mean, and a lot of that speaks to that hasn't been an early round priority for them over the years. Typically, it's been the Matt Judons, the Darius Smith
Well,
types that have
Terrell
been.
Suggs fell down the hill because he chased people with a baseball bat at a basketball game. So, like, Terrell
Sure.
Suggs fell to the Ravens because other teams said, nah. And
And there
the
were
same
questions
thing,
about his body
Mike
type and all that. Yeah.
Green fell through the league because no one wanted to touch him, knowing he was a good
At
player.
least not that early, right? I mean, okay. Were there other teams ready to pounce at that point in the draft after the Ravens? I'm guessing there probably were. I mean, sometimes it's a case where it's a pass fail. Someone's either off your board entirely, or you say, okay, if he gets to this point, we've talked to him about it. It's maybe not the worst scenario in the world, but it's not ideal. Clearly, he's in a position where we better be right. And we're taking a gamble. And the difference here, and that's why I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com that you better be right about him, is it's way different when you take this on, right? When it happens to a player that's already in your program, you can always hide behind the sentiment of what? We didn't know. In this case,
Or lie
if,
about it in the case of the Ravens. Just lie
sure.
that you didn't know.
Well,
Yeah, that's.
but you understand what I'm saying. Any team can use that excuse that, or it can be genuine, who knows? But in the case of Mike Green, you're taking this on. So if details come out about this that are very damning, you have no one to blame but yourself. You deserve every bit of criticism you're going to get. If there's another allegation at some point here of a similar, again, sexual assault allegation, we don't know a single detail other than happened in high school. The reporting from The Athletic that was done back at the time of the combine indicated that the University of Virginia had asked him to sign a zero tolerance, some kind of agreement. And then there was another anonymous allegation of when he was at Virginia and he left the program. I have not heard any detail beyond that. Certainly nothing to the degree of description that we've heard in the Baltimore Banner. About Justin Tucker with massage therapists, right? So
Well, Mike Green's going
it's
to get
tough.
asked about it, right? I mean,
I mean, he's going to be, but at the same time, I mean, he's certainly not going to discuss in great detail what he was accused of, what happened, anything like that. He acknowledged accusations. He's never been charged. He was not charged in either case. I don't know. I mean, again, that's so little to go off of. I'm not saying it's nothing, and I think it's completely inappropriate to assume it's nothing. But the Ravens, according to Eric DaCosta, they did their homework on it, and they feel, quote, comfortable drafting him.
well, Zay
They better be
Flowers had
right.
allegations 2 years ago, too, right?
Sure. So they better be right, because it's a different animal when you voluntarily take it on. So if Mike Green is a model citizen and doesn't get into trouble, and is a great football player and does everything the Ravens ask him to do, and he stays out of trouble and keeps his nose clean, then this will probably be not po probably will be completely forgotten. And if he's a great on top of that, if he's a really great player, it'll be totally forgotten. But if something comes out about this at some point, either one of these, accusations, or heaven forbid something new to were to occur, then you deserve every bit of criticism you're
Well,
going
the
to
Ravens
get.
said they're
So,
comfortable, right?
yeah. So they did. So it's on them then at that point, right? I mean, again, when it's a player in your building who is then accused of something, you can hide behind the we didn't know, right? This isn't the guy that we've known to this point in time. In this case, you're taking this on. You've voluntarily taken this on. So, and to be clear, Mike Green's a heck of a prospect. I mean, from a football standpoint, adding someone like him with the 59th overall pick, I mean, that's a home run from an on-field football standpoint. As I said, I don't, and you know me, Nestor, I'm not Mr. Hot Take. I think you look at this very well might be on paper the best pass rushing prospect that they've drafted since Terrell Suggs. And again, so much of that speaks to how many first round and second round edge rushers have they really taken in the 22 years since they drafted Suggs? It's a pretty short list. It's typically been Matt Judon in the fifth round, Za'Darius Smith in the fourth round, guys like that, where,
And they've also shopped the Elvis
sure. And
Dumervilles,
yeah, I
and
mean, so
they
many
brought
veterans.
guys
Yeah,
in,
no
sure.
question. So this hasn't been the way they've gone about it.
Even
So
McCrary, right? It was a trade,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
exactly. So that's why, again, I'm, and when I make that comparison, let me be clear. That's not me predicting that he is going to be the next Terrell Suggs. I'm talking in terms of evaluating him as a prospect at age 21 compared to Terrell Suggs coming out of Arizona State, compared to all their other, Adafi Owe coming out of Penn State. at the end of the first round 4 years ago. So, again, from a football standpoint, you love it, but you can't just view it through that lens, and that's where they better be right. This is a gamble they're taking, and they say they're comfortable. All right. If more comes out about this, or if he has future problems, then it's on you, because you can't say you didn't know then. You told everyone you did your homework. You told everyone you were comfortable with them. So, and again, we know so little. So I'm not sitting here speaking in an authoritative way about the situation, but in light of the Justin Tucker saga and where that is right now and wherever it's going here in the coming days, weeks, and months, again, you better be right, because the timing for this, I mean, this was pretty easily their most controversial draft selection. I mean, go back to Sergio Kindle. I mean, you go back to, it's been a while since they've taken someone that clearly had some perceived red flags as far as, at least some accusations, while acknowledging, again, we know so little, was not charged with anything in either case. But at the same time, these were two separate allegations at two separate points in time. So I don't think you certainly can't chalk it up to, oh, it's just an isolated incident, when there are two different accusations. You hear what the Ravens say and you say, okay, if you're comfortable with it, fine. But
A lot of other teams were not comfortable with it.
that's the whole point. This isn't a league where teams are in the business of foregoing edge rush help. If knowing what kind of talent Mike Green is, and again, he's go watch the tape. I mean, this guy, albeit not at the highest level of competition at Marshall, but there are very few things about his game you would say you don't like. I mean, he gets after the quarterback. He plays the run well. I mean, I would think from day one, not saying he'll start because they have Kyle Van Noy and Odafe Oweh, under contract this year, but I certainly have every expectation he's going to be in the top three. Those three are going to
He's
be.
going to get on the field.
I mean, you'd be shocked if he's not. So, and like I said, whether you're talking about Mel Kiper, Dane Brugler, like all the top draft pundits that you would point to, I mean, everyone said this guy was a first round pick, and you'll find some of the top 100 rankings and everything. You'll find some of those that even had him ranked ahead of Malachi Starks. So from a value standpoint in terms of football, I mean, you could make the argument the Ravens got two first round picks in terms of value to add to their defense. But again, you better be right about the character stuff, because again, it's a way different situation when you're willingly taking that on rather than someone you've had in your system for X number of years, and then suddenly there's a problem because you can't hide behind the "well, we didn't know."
Luke and I chatted about Malachi Starks at the length. We've now chatted about Mike Green and Justin Tucker and Tyler Loop, the new kicker. 11 players, Luke, and you monitored all weekend. Let's go through some names and let's go through some positions. This time last year, it was the Roger Rosengartens and trying to get to know some new players and some new names. Mike Green's easy; he's a hockey player, just transition out of the penalty box, no doubt about that for the Caps. But the rest of the draft and all the things we talked about, corner, safety, offensive line, defensive line, kicker, it's all in there, right? I mean, the one thing it was not in there was a Mark Andrews trade.
There was not a Mark Andrews trade. And the other thing I would say that wasn't in there in terms of, to me, what was a very clear need, they didn't really get that wide-bodied run-stopping defensive tackle, that interior defensive lineman to essentially replace Michael Pierce,
There was a run on that, like in the third round. I was watching on Saturday, and like five or six guys in a row got taken, and they all look like a nose tackle. They all look 5'11" and 400 pounds, you know.
Yeah, the guy that they ended up taking on the defensive line, Aeneas Peebles from Virginia Tech, really odd body type. He's 6 foot, 289 pounds. I mean, that's generally not, if you're talking about a 6 foot defensive lineman, fine, but it's typically a 345 pound nose tackle that's going using leverage and all that. But Peebles was a favorite of John Harbaugh in the pre-draft evaluation. And Eric DaCosta said, he's not your prototypical Ravens defensive lineman, but could be someone that I could see being in the mix as a situational interior pass rusher, which is something they haven't really had a whole lot of over the years. So intriguing. It's a sixth round pick. Again, a lot of these picks that we talk about are six rounders. And I get it. People will say, well, what about Adalys Thomas? Chuck Clark was a late round pick. Geno Stone in more recent years was a,
Well, if
so
you
it's
have
not as
five of them, you hope to get one of them on the field,
one or
really.
two. Yeah.
That's it,
Can
yeah.
one or two become at the very least good rotational, reliable backup role players for you? And if that happens, then that's great. But yeah, the run stopping interior defensive lineman is still something that they're lacking. So that is something that typically you can find even on the free agent market in May and June, even at the end of training camp. They could still bring Brent Urban back, for example, and that's not exactly the same skill set that I'm talking about here. But the point is, I think of that compared to edge rush help, corner, things of that nature. Generally, you can find help there. Heck, considering the reputation of this draft class, I think you're going to see the Ravens bring in at least a few undrafted defensive linemen onto this roster because they have the roster space for it. They might find the next Michael Pierce through that avenue. So that's the one thing that you would point to. But you look at this draft, and let's go with the through the fifth round at the very least, and then we can get into some of the later round guys, of course. But third round, Emory Jones Jr., which kind of funny because they had a quarterback named Emory Jones on their preseason roster last year. But offensive tackle, right tackle at LSU, everyone seems to think, other than DaCosta and Harbaugh kind of slow played this a little bit, but the general sentiment on him is that he's going to be a guard at the next level. I think they'll probably line him up a little bit at right tackle just to see, but I think he's got a chance to be in the mix at left guard. With Andrew Voorhees, who's kind of the early favorite to be the guy. I mean, he was the week one guy last year, so I don't think that's that's not unreasonable or anything like that. So, but he's 6'5", 315 pounds. Again, I think most pundits, if you go back and read different draft profiles, things of that nature, seem to like him at guard at the next level. And something to keep in mind, not just Voorhees at left guard, but Fa'alele at right guard. Fa'alele's in a contract year. Now, I'm not saying he won't be the starter this year. I'm not saying they wouldn't re-sign him, but you're also not sitting there saying, oh, let's throw a bunch of money at him. So, Emory Jones, it might be that he's your top backup guard for year one, and maybe he's their starting right guard next year, So again, third round pick. Can he be in the mix for a starting job? Absolutely. Do you expect him to be the starter? Generally not. You're generally not viewing a guy through that lens, but he was one of two offensive linemen that they took. The other one was a seventh round guard, who Garrett Dellinger, who was a 3-year starter at LSU. Again, they tapped into LSU, an SEC player, made 30 starts there. He's more of a true guard, but he's a seventh round pick. Best case scenario, he becomes a useful backup for you the next couple of years. I mean, the 1% scenario is that maybe he does become the next Bradley Bozeman and a starter in a couple of years, but you're certainly not expecting that out of a seventh round pick. So they added to their offensive line. They added a third rounder and a seventh rounder. We'll take a look at some of the other guys that are already on the roster. Again, right now, Voorhees is the early favorite to be the left guard, but certainly with Emory Jones, he's interesting. But sounds like, even though he was an offensive tackle, sounds like he's much more of the guard type. So, yeah, that kind of still leaves you with the question of who the swing tackle is going to be. So, is there a veteran player out there that they could bring in? We've seen them do that before as well. They certainly still need that because, one, you just need a backup for Ronnie Stanley and/or Roger Rosengarten. Even if Rosengarten is the backup to Stanley at left tackle, then you need a right tackle. So, is there a veteran that addition to be made there? Could be. That would not surprise me. That's something I think we all should be on the lookout for here over the next few weeks, because even if you thought Emory Jones could be a tackle at the next level, are you counting on him to be your swing tackle week one? Yeah, that's pretty ambitious, and even though Ronnie Stanley played 17 games last year and that was great and you're happy to re-sign him, you also know the history suggests you're probably going to need someone to fill in at least a couple games over the course of the season. So that's something you'd still look at, but
Well, they got Ben Cleveland too.
Yeah, well, I mean, interior, for a backup guard, they certainly have that. But you said it. I mean, you made the prediction, and you weren't alone in that. I concurred with you, but they did come away with a couple offensive linemen. I think we all were expecting that to happen.
11 picks and plenty to pick from. We're going to talk some baseball around here because we're not running from the Orioles and all their problems. The Yankees are in town. We have 6 months before we have to play. Rookies will be coming in. There'll be mini camps. There'll be all that good stuff. Luke will be covering the Ravens as he did all weekend. If you're on the WNST text service, you know you got all the picks first. All of it brought to you by our friends at Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. Bill Cole joined me last week on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out at Cooper's North before I went to the zoo this weekend. We had some fun this week. Had a big gala with our friends at Coppin State. I even got a new Coppin State drink mug that I'm going to be drinking from here, a little coffee mug to fill up. So a big week. We're at Coco's on Wednesday doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It is presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Looking forward to handing some Back to the Futures out. And there's a rumor about this crab melt. I'll be telling you more about that. We're going to get some baseball in here, some football in here, and a whole bunch of civics as we roll it up. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.